And now it's time for the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. I'm Uncle Dennis here at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org on Thursday, the 15th of September. I'd like to ask you to have a pencil and paper handy so you can take down names, addresses, telephone numbers, web pages, all that information that you'll need in order to take action. Let's start with announcements. The EPIC staff is inviting you to help them celebrate the 20-year anniversary of the Headwaters Forest Reserve and relive the history to struggle to protect headwaters while learning about the contemporary challenges for management, conservation, restoration in the reserve and elsewhere in the Redwood region. I believe that's actually 30-year anniversary. The free public hike will originate from Newburgh Park on September 17th at 10 a.m. in Fortuna. For more information, contact Rob at wildcalifornia.org. The 3-mile loop hike is fairly easy. The hike will be led by EPIC staff, and the topics covered will include ecology, sociology, history, management, protection, and conservation of our public parks and reserves in the Redwood region. As always, if you come, please be prepared for our local conditions and for conditions generally found in our forest. Please wear appropriate clothing and footwear, bring food, water, and anything else you may need to be comfortable and safe in the forest. Once again, that's Saturday, September 17th at 10 a.m. in Fortuna. And remembering the campaign to save Headwaters Forest, in this story by Rob DiPerna, the year 2016 marks the 30th anniversary of the beginning of the citizen-led campaign to save Headwaters Forest, which was, at the time, the last significant old-growth redwood forest left unprotected on private forest lands in the world. Today, the 7,750-acre Headwaters Forest Reserve, located just southeast of Eureka, stands as a testament to the commitment, dedication, and visionary spirit of thousands of everyday people who came to Humboldt County, California, from all over the country and the world to protect the last remaining unprotected old-growth redwood forest in a struggle that spanned 2 decades. EPIC was on the front lines of the campaign to save Headwaters Forest, serving as a last line of legal defense, using the law and courts to hold public agencies and the lawless Maxam Pacific Lumber Company accountable, and to protect the old-growth redwood forests in the Headwaters Forest Complex until the eventual political compromise of the 1999 Headwaters Forest Agreement could be reached. EPIC used both state and federal government and endangered species law to slow the destructive march of Pacific Lumber's liquidation logging, and in the process established legal standards that still persist today. EPIC's legal strategies, combined with massive citizen-led movements of nonviolent civil disobedience led by Earth First and Judy Berry, that involved thousands of arrests over the 2 decades of the struggle, eventually led state and federal officials to fashion the compromise that was the 1999 Headwaters Forest Agreement, known pejoratively to forest activists as the Deal, with the Houston, Texas, Maxam Corporation, owned by Charles Hurwitz, who orchestrated a hostile takeover of the previously family-owned Pacific Lumber Company using junk bonds acquired through the now infamous savings and loan scandal of the 1980s. The month of September commemorates the regulatory end of the seasonal nesting restriction season for logging in the critical habitat of the marbled murrelet, a small yam-sized seabird in the stealth that stealthily nests high up in the big mossy branches of old-growth trees up and down the Pacific Northwest coast. The end of the marbled murrelet nesting season every September 15th meant renewed attempts by Pacific Lumber to log approved timber harvest plans in old-growth redwood stands in the Headwaters Forest Complex, and also signaled the beginning of the so-called salvage logging of old-growth trees in and around the Headwaters Forest. 20 years ago, on September 15, 1996, 6,000 people attended the Rally in Civil Disobedience event at Fisher Gate in Carlotta, California, with over 1,000 people arrested for trespassing in protest of the logging of the old growth in and around Headwaters. The September 15, 1996 rally stands as the single largest mass civil disobedience action ever to protect forests in the United States. 2 years later, on September 17, 1998, as the campaign to save Headwaters was nearing its conclusion, an unconscionable tragedy marred the battle to save the last of the unprotected old-growth redwood forest, as David Nathan Gypsy Chain was killed by an angry Pacific lumber logger who felled a tree directly at the forest defenders who were attempting to slow logging adjacent to Grizzly Creek State Park along Highway 36. September 17th marked the 18th anniversary of Gypsy's death and serves as a sobering reminder of the very real human cost of the so-called timber wars here in the Redwoods. Epic and other forest activists are rallying to commemorate and remember the initiation of a campaign to save Headwaters Forest on this 30th anniversary of the burgeoning of the movement that shaped the lives of thousands and the fate of our rural communities in the 17 years since the consummation of the 1999 Headwaters Forest Agreement. And once again, there'll be a tour of Headwaters this Saturday, September 17th. Meet at 10 a.m. at Newburgh Park in Fortuna, California. All are welcome. And if you need more information, go to wildcalifornia.org. And Strawberry Rock Forest defenders set up a tree sit to fight clear-cutting in California's forests. In this story by the Strawberry Rock Forest defenders, found on the Earth First Newswire. For over a century, Green Diamond Resource Company has further debilitated the redwood ecosystem, starting with poor land management practices by parent company Simpson Investment and by prior timber companies in harvesting on stolen lands. Numerous endangered species like the marble murrelet, spotted owl, Pacific fisher, Humboldt martin, coho salmon, and many others have been placed in harm's way and threatened by extinction from the timber industry's practices. To make matters worse, the constant use of herbicides and pesticides, which poisons the soil, water, and wildlife, further an unnatural recovery of the forest. Habitual clear-cut plan, let's not. In the redwood forest around Strawberry Rock, we continue to take a stand against clear-cut logging and all other forms of deforestation. The current paradigm of forest management is a sham that we feel necessary to oppose. Therefore, we have set up a tree sit north of Strawberry Rock, a couple of miles north of the so-called Trinidad, California, within Timber Harvest Plan 1-10.058. We are demanding that this land be preserved for future generations, a community forest that all beings can appreciate and prosper from. Redwood forests, if left to grow, could be the greatest carbon sink on Earth. That alone makes their continued survival paramount. Unfortunately, the timber industry uses science that is not only flawed but proven false by the scientific community to continue their destructive practices. By turning a cold shoulder, the California Department of Forestry approves timber harvest plans without much forethought. This insanity must be stopped, or we may never see healthy forests, vibrant wildlife, or an end to global warming ever again. The Forest Stewardship Council and the Sustainable Forestry Initiative have both certified Green Diamond Resources as sustainable. However, their 425,000 acres of private land in Northern California is anything but that. An even-aged tree farm on a 45-year rotation is not a flourishing natural environment. Since the redwood tree sprouts from stumps, every harvest increases the number of small trees growing on site. If an old-growth stump produces 10 sprouts, when these trees are cut, each second-growth stump sprouts many more trees, turning our forests into thickets. Many of Green Diamond's holdings are now in their third and even fourth growth. The current drought isn't going to help grow a temperate rainforest that once survived from 2 million acres of old-growth perspiring moisture. What works for Green Diamond is neither a healthy forest nor a planet. In solidarity with land defenders and eco-prisoners around the world, For the Wild, written by Strawberry Rock Forest defenders. And Sea Shepherd's crew's life has been threatened by a Mexican cartel in the Gulf of California. A crew member aboard the Sea Shepherd vessel, motor vessel Farley Mowat, received anonymous death threats this week while on campaign in the Sea of Cortez. Farley Mowat is currently in Mexico's Gulf of California for the Operación Ángel de la Guardia, a campaign to protect the imperiled Totoaba bass. The vessel was patrolling in the southern part of the sea near Isla Ángel de Guardia, a section that is notorious for drug and Totoaba trafficking. Totoba is hunted by poachers solely for its swim bladder, which is sold in the black market in China in excess of $20,000 per kilo. Due to its high street value, the totoba bladder is frequently referred to as aquatic cocaine. On September 7th, while the Moat had returned to the northern area to refuel, campaign leader J.P. Jeffrey, a native of Chile, reported that he received a phone call at approximately 7 p.m. warning him not to let the boat travel back south. "They knew my name, my mother's and daughter's names, what looked like a home address in Chile," said Jeffrey. "They knew the boat's name, its movements, and said if we go back south, my daughter and I will be dead." Sea Shepherd founder Paul Watson said he is not taking the threat lightly. "Sea Shepherd takes threats of violence very seriously, especially in high-risk areas, but we will not be deterred by them. What we do is dangerous, we know it's dangerous, but the stakes are too high to back down in the face of threats from criminals attempting to endanger the lives and the survival of our clients at sea. When we receive threats, it simply corroborates the fact that our campaigns are successful," said Chief Operating Officer David Hance. "While we will take steps to protect our crew, we will not run away. Threats will never deter us from our mission of protecting the oceans and the animals that live in them." According to Jeffrey, the callers did not ask for money. Their only demand was that the Farley Moat not return to the southern area of the Sea of Cortez. They said, "We are the cartel," although they did not specify which cartel, Jeffrey recalled. The threat was reported to Mexican authorities, and additional security measures are now being taken by Sea Shepherd in light of the incident. "This is not going to stop our work in the south," said Jeffrey of the threat. "Our job is to be here to retrieve illegal nets and work with the Mexican authorities to prevent the extinction of species such as the totoba, along with other animals at risk." Fortunately, since the launch of Operation Ángel de la Guardia last month, the totoba have been found trapped in nets removed by Sea Shepherd. However, the crew recently found the body of a sea lion that had perished while it was caught in the illegal gill nets. When Sea Shepherd arrived at the scene, a male sea lion swam nearby, refusing to leave the floating corpse. He watched as Sea Shepherd worked to cut the carcass from the nets and properly dispose of it. For further information, go to www.seashepherd.org. And a news release from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. Poachers have been fined for illegally taking abalone in Southern California. Two Southern California men have been convicted and fined for abalone poaching and other resource crimes stemming from a September 2015 enforcement case. California Department of Fish and Wildlife officers assigned to the patrol boat Thresher discovered the two men poaching abalone at Catalina Island. The Los Angeles County District Attorney's Office subsequently prosecuted both individuals. Hewan Chai, 75, of Los Angeles, was charged with taking and possessing six pink abalone. Chai pleaded no contest to all six poaching counts. He was ordered by the court to pay $61,626 in fines and penalties and $1,000 to the California Department of Fish and Wildlife Preservation Fund. Additionally, all of his scuba equipment was forfeited by the court and his fishing privileges have been permanently revoked. Jin Chai Zhang, 58, of Garden Grove, was charged with taking and possessing two pink abalone, three green abalone, four spiny lobsters out of season, as well as attempting to destroy evidence. Zhang pleaded no contest to all of the abalone and lobster charges. He was also ordered by the court to pay $61,626 in fines and penalties and $1,000 to the Preservation Fund. His scuba gear was also forfeited by the court, and his fishing privileges have also been permanently revoked. An extraordinary amount of time and effort is invested in helping the Southern California abalone populations rebound, including the sacrifice of honest abalone harvesters who cannot currently fish for abalone south of San Francisco, said CDFW Law Enforcement Assistant Chief Mike Stefanik. Years ago, abalone poaching laws were significantly strengthened as part of the overall recovery plan to protect California's abalone populations, but even so, we've seen an increase in poaching crimes. Once we find the offenders, we rely on the diligence of district attorneys' offices and the courts to ensure that justice is served. Successful prosecutions such as these will hopefully serve as a deterrent for anyone considering committing these crimes against the environment. All of California's abalone species are struggling, including two that are federally listed as endangered. Disease, predation, slow reproduction, and poaching have necessitated a moratorium on abalone harvesting south of San Francisco Bay since 1997. Red abalone populations north of San Francisco are the only population stable enough to support a limited recreational harvest. Anyone believes they are witnessing illegal hunting, fishing, or pollution are encouraged to call CalTIP, California Department of Fish and Wildlife's confidential secret witness program, at 888-334-2258. That is 888-334-2258, or send a text to TIP-411, TIP-411. Both methods allow the public to provide wildlife officers with factual information to assist the investigations. Callers may remain anonymous if desired, and a reward can result from the successful capture and prosecution of these criminals. Protection at last for a rare orchid. Flower lovers rejoice. A 2-foot-tall orchid surviving in small populations in just 6 southeastern states has finally been protected under the Endangered Species Act. The white fringeless orchid, first identified as needing federal protection back in 1975, is sometimes also called monkey-faced orchid because its flower looks like a monkey's face. This incredible plant is at risk from global climate change, which, besides threatening its habitat with drought, also threatens the fungus and pollinators it needs to survive. The plant was protected as part of the Center for Biological Diversity's landmark agreement to spur protection decisions for 757 imperiled animals and plants around the country. I'm breathing a sigh of relief that this beautiful flower has at long last gained protection after a 41-year wait, said the Center for Biological Diversity's Tiara Curry. And the federal government is drastically cutting back on red wolf recovery. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service said this week it will drastically limit the recovery area for red wolves to one military bombing range and a wildlife refuge in Dare County, North Carolina, but hopes to identify new sites for wolf reintroductions and double the number of captive breeding pairs. The agency's long-delayed announcement came after it stated in June of 2015 that it was suspending red wolf reintroductions into the wild while it reevaluated the feasibility of the species recovery program. It's good the service is acknowledging that we need more breeding pairs and new reintroduction sites to spur red wolf recovery, said the Center for Biological Diversity's Jamie Pang, but we're extremely disappointed in the agency's highly political decision to confine red wolves to only public federal lands. And a massive California coastal development has been stopped after intensive advocacy by environmental groups, including the Center for Biological Diversity and local community members. California's Coastal Commission last week voted to deny a controversial proposal to develop one of the largest private open parcels of land remaining on the Southern California coast. The Newport Banning Ranch project would have built around 900 homes, a hotel, and shops in an Orange County oil field overlooking the Pacific Ocean, a site that, although damaged by decades of oil extraction and development, remains a critical refuge for wildlife, including burrowing owls. And emergency protections have been sought for a southwestern dancing bird. The Center for Biological Diversity, Wild Earth Guardians, and Defenders of Wildlife have petitioned to protect the rare lesser prairie chicken, the dancing grouse of the Southwest, under the Endangered Species Act, with new studies showing greater likelihood of the bird's extinction across several states. In 2014, the Fish and Wildlife Service listed the bird as threatened, but a federal court in Texas subsequently vacated those protections. The new petition prompts the agency to reinstate protections for the entire species, seeking emergency help for the most imperiled, isolated populations. The service is essentially doing nothing for these birds, said the Centers for Biological Diversity's Tanya Sanarib. Without the act, the birds won't make it. And a lawsuit has been launched to save whales from deadly gear. The Center for Biological Diversity's and allies have filed plans to sue the National Marine Fisheries Service to protect endangered whales from mile-long gill drift nets and strings of sablefish pots off the West Coast. There are more than 60 reports of whales caught in fishing gear off the West Coast in 2015, and 40 whales were reported entangled this year as of June 30th, putting 2016 on pace to break records. We can't stand by and watch as whales get tangled up and die in fishing gear. It's just not right, said the Center for Biological Diversity's Catherine Woodluff. And imperiled Texas grass is proposed for protection. Following an agreement requiring the feds to decide on protection for 757 species, the Fish and Wildlife Service has proposed to list the Guadalupe fescue, a 3-foot-tall high mountain bunch grass in Texas, under the Endangered Species Act. The agency simultaneously proposed to protect 7,815 acres for the plant, threatened by grazing and invasive species, and the only surviving in one U.S. location. This act will give this graceful grass a chance to return to other woodlands where it formerly thrived, said the Center for Biological Diversity's Michael Robinson. If you want more information, go to www.biologicaldiversity.org. And Australia's rules for the giant Adani coal mine are ruled inadequate. The Adani Group is moving ahead with its $16 billion Australian Carmichael coal mine in Queensland's Galilee Basin, despite a new report on conservation groups that finds the conditions the federal government set when it approved the mine are inadequate and will not protect the environment as claimed. The project is located about 300 kilometers, about 200 miles inland in the remote central Queensland. When then Federal Environment Minister Greg Hunt reapproved the coal project in October of 2015, he said the approval was subject to 36 of the strictest conditions in Australia's history. Yet the new report finds that these 36 conditions will not stop the mine from pushing the endangered black-throated finch closer to extinction by destroying critical finch habitat in the Galilee Basin. They will not safeguard the ecologically and culturally significant Dungmumbola Springs and will do nothing to protect the Great Barrier Reef from the damage the mine's coal will do once the coal is burned, the report demonstrates. Far from being the strictest in Australian history, these conditions have so many gaps you could drive a mining truck through them, which is exactly what Adani intends to do, said Australian Conservation Foundation CEO Kelly O'Shaughnessy. Instead of safeguarding habitat for critical for the survival of the species, the conditions allow Adani to destroy the area, providing it offsets the destruction by providing alternative habitat for the species at another location. But Adani is not required to protect this alternative habitat before starting construction of the mine, nor is it required to provide evidence that the offset will actually protect the finch, as the report points out. If the impact on the finch from the mine turns out to be greater than expected, Adani is not required to take further action or make good the unexpected harm. Adani is permitted to bulldoze an area that is home to the largest surviving population of the endangered black-throated finch on the condition that the company provides alternative habitat for the species at another location, yet Adani is not required to protect this alternative habitat before destroying the finch's current habitat, said O'Shaughnessy. The Adani Carmichael coal mine also threatens the Dungmumbola Springs complex. These springs are culturally significant to the local Aboriginal people and are a precious source of water for a unique ecological system of species in this dry landscape. The conservationists say that the minister has granted approval of the mine without being certain about how it could affect the springs. The minister has not even been able to ascertain what level of interference will cause the springs to dry up. The approval conditions require research programs to be conducted to establish the full extent of the impact, but these are not required to be done before mining excavation is allowed to begin. The damage could be done before the results of any studies are known. Once a spring goes dry, it cannot be restored. And from Sea Shepherd, two illegal Congolese fishing boats have been arrested in Gabon's territorial waters. The crew of the Sea Shepherd SIP motor yacht Bob Barker has assisted Gabonese authorities in the arrest of two illegal fishing boats operating in the waters off the coast of Gabon, Central West Africa. The arrest followed a coordinated effort between Marine Nationale, the Gabonese Navy, the ANPA, Fisheries Enforcement Agency, and Sea Shepherd to secure the Gabonese border with the Republic of Congo from incursions made by illegal fishing vessels. At the time of the interception, the Congolese boats were actively engaging in illegal fishing with gill nets inside Gabon's territorial waters. The wooden canoes with 11 fishermen from the Republic of Congo, Benin, and Ghana were on board and were found with a combined total of approximately 150 sharks, including endangered scalloped hammerhead sharks and black-tip reef sharks, as well as devil rays in their fish holds. After the arrest, the Mariaba Barker escorted the boats to Mayumba, Gabon, where they will be held pending criminal investigations. Launched in April, Operation Albacore is a joint campaign between Sea Shepherd Conservation, the government of Gabon, and more recently the governments of Sao Tome and Principe to tackle illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing in the Gulf of Guinea. And a humpback has been delisted in this story by Ramona Young Grindle of the Court News Service, found on the Earth First Newswire. Conservationists are concerned about the delisting of 9 populations of humpback whales, while the number of whale entanglements in fishing nets is on the rise. The National Marine Fisheries Service finalized its delisting of 9 distinct population segments of humpback whales last week. 4 other populations will remain listed as endangered, and 1 population was downlisted to threatened. The entire species of humpback whales has been listed as endangered under the Endangered Species Act since 1970. The move to divide the species into population segments and to delist some of them was spurred by a 2013 petition from the Hawaii Fishermen's Alliance for Conservation and Tradition to reclassify and delist the North Pacific humpback population, and a 2014 petition from the state of Alaska to reclassify the Central North Pacific population and remove it from Endangered Species Act protection. The original proposal would have delisted 10 populations, kept 2 populations as endangered, and downlisted 2 populations to threatened. Today's news is a true ecological success story, Eileen Sobeck, assistant administrator for the Fisheries Service, said. Whales, including humpbacks, serve an important role in the marine environment. Separately managing humpback whale populations are largely independent of each other, allows us to tailor conservation approaches for each population. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is produced every Thursday evening at Free Radio Santa Cruz and broadcast at 9 p.m. You can hear an update rebroadcast tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock. There are also a number of other stations around the United States that rebroadcast the Earth First Update. Check your local nonprofit community radio station. If you don't see it on their schedule, please ask them to broadcast. They can find the download at radioforall.net. That's radio, the number, forall.net, where you can also listen to this program or any previous Earth First Update. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced at Free Radio Santa Cruz. I want to thank you for listening, and please do tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.